When it comes to the world of books, romance is queen. It's the most popular literary genre in North America and has been for decades. This hour, romance is in the air. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My first guest today is 94 years old, but she is still making men and women swoon. I'll talk with romance writer Dorothy Garlock of Clear Lake. She's written 60 books, had 7 bestsellers, and she is still writing. I'll also talk romance writing with Iowa authors Maggie Rivers of Des Moines, Barbara Barrett of Waukee, and Heidi Cullinan of Ames. We also want to hear from you. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're going to focus on romance. I'll talk with Iowa romance writers, and I'm starting with Iowa's preeminent romance novelist. Millions of readers all over the world have fallen in love with the historical romances of Dorothy Garlock. She's published 60 books, and 7 of those books have been New York Times bestsellers. And she's done it all from her home in Clear Lake, Iowa. Dorothy Garlock's latest book, Take Me Home, comes out on July 1st, and the 94-year-old is still writing. And she is with me by telephone today. Hello, Dorothy.
Hello there.
Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Well, I'm enjoying it, I'm sure.
And I know that becoming a writer was not really a dream of yours. This was something that happened almost by accident. Can you tell me how you got started?
Well, I've always been a reader. I think all writers are readers, and I've been reading all my life. When I was young, I was reading Jane Grey. And the other kids were reading Little Women or Little Men, but Jane Grey was my favorite.
And you grew up in Oklahoma,
right? I did. I grew up in Oklahoma City.
So was it the westerns of Jane Grey that really captured your imagination?
I think it is. And then later on, I wrote books about Route 66 because Route 66 went right to Oklahoma City.
When did you started writing in the summer of 1976 while you were on a long vacation with your husband? Tell me what happened.
Well, my husband retired, and of course he wanted to do like all other Iowans, you know, put the trailer behind the pickup and go south to the valley. We did that, and we got down there, and I was bored to death. Because if you didn't like shuffleboard and you hadn't had a recent operation, there was nothing to talk about. So I got an old typewriter and started just amusing myself. And I wrote my first book in about 3 months down there.
And you had never really written anything fiction before?
No fiction. I'd written for the newspaper here, but no fiction. But gee, I thought that was fun. Because you could kill off the bad guys if you wanted to, and that was fun. I enjoyed writing fiction.
So you wrote that first novel in just about 3 months, and then you kept on going, right?
I did. I entered that one in a contest for unpublished authors, and an agent was one of the judges, and he called and he said my book didn't have any literary value, but it was entertaining, and he wanted to know if he could sell it. Naturally, I said, sure. So he sold it, and then I told him I had 2 more at home, and he said, send them. And he sold those.
Wow.
So I was on my way.
Did those first few books, did they sell well?
Oh, yeah, that first one sold real well. It was Love and Cherish. And I enjoyed so doing it that I just kept about 3 books a year for quite a while.
Where do the ideas come from for you?
I don't know. I think ideas are something that, you know, you get them out of the newspaper, out of the everyday life, all the stories people tell. I just think they're back there in the corner of your mind and they just come out.
You write historical romance novels, so does that mean you have to do research to make sure that the details ring true?
Oh, yes. Absolutely, because you don't want to, you know, somebody to think you're not in that time period. I've had editors that, you know, they little gals right out of college and they didn't know the time periods. And they would, you know, edit my books and I'd have to go back and redo them.
So they just didn't sound right after that, huh?
No, one of the little gals said, you know, I said they eyed the potatoes before they planted them. They had to eye them first, and she changed it. They gazed at them. So, you know, just different things like that. So,
well, it's a good thing you went back through after she edited you, huh?
It sure is.
So once your books got published and they started selling well, how did that change your life?
It didn't change it much. We still traveled a lot, and I rode in the back of we had a trailer attached to the back of the pickup, like I said, and I'd sit back there in the evening and write, and it didn't change very much.
For some people, hearing that must be a little bit of a surprise, because I think a lot of people dream of becoming a best-selling author, and I know it's hard to make a living as an author, but you've done it. You've been so successful. I suppose some people wonder, well, why didn't you buy a big house or move to New York City?
Well, see, I've had people ask me that, and I thought, I can do just as well here in Clear Lake, Iowa, as I could in New York City, because most of what you do, you learn over the telephone. So I've called people all over the United States to get different facts. Now, I call the penitentiary down in Kansas to ask them whether they hung people or electrocuted. I got talking to one of the guys down there, and we had a real good conversation.
Do all of your neighbors in Clear Lake, do they know that you're a world-famous novelist?
Oh, I don't think they pay any attention. I'm just Dorothy Garlock, that old lady, you know, that lives out on 25th Avenue South.
You have received, I'm sure, many, many letters from readers who love your books over the years.
Yes.
How would you describe your relationship with your readers?
Oh, I love my readers, and I've had many good ideas from my readers. And I had one that come to see me from Michigan, and she had read every one of my books. And, of course, that's quite a few books when I've written over 50.
Yeah.
And she came to see me.
Really?
And I've had letters from prisoners in the penitentiary. You know, they read, too. But it's been fun. I've touched a lot of people.
Absolutely.
And a lot of them have touched me.
You have said that writer's block is something that you've never had to deal with. Is that true?
That's true. I've never had writer's block. I don't know why. I just, when the words quit coming, I just shut down the computer and go do something else. And the first thing I know, I'm back at it.
Wow. And you were writing about 3 books a year for a while. I mean, you've been incredibly prolific, and it just comes to you.
It does. It just comes, and I even after I shut off the computer and go to bed at night, I'll think, oh shoot, she wouldn't have done that, or he wouldn't have done that, and the next morning I get up and go change it, and you know, you just kind of live in those characters when you're writing a book.
Do you still find time to do a lot of reading?
Oh, yes. I have a Kindle now, and that's easier for me to hold and to read. And it's kind of fun to see my books on the Kindle.
Sure. What kind of books do you like to read now?
I like the same things that I like to write. I like to read wilderness books and good Westerns, either contemporary or old ones. And I like everything except, let's see, I don't care for, the werewolves and the...
the vampires?
That's vampires, that sort of thing.
The characters in your books seem to share some common traits. You write a lot about strong-willed women.
Oh, yes. Who wants to read about a wimpy woman? Every woman likes to think they're strong. I like a strong woman, and I don't like a wimpy man either.
How much do you still write?
Well, I write quite a bit, but my grandson helps me a lot, and then he types them off when I tell him, and then I take my pencil and edit it so that they're still my books.
You're working with your grandson. Are there any uncomfortable moments when you're writing romance novels with your grandson's assistance?
Oh, no. He's a modern boy. Man, rather. I still think of him as a boy, and he's almost 40 years old.
Yeah, well, grandmas tend to do that. So this latest novel, you've written a lot of novels that have taken place in the West and on the frontier. This latest novel takes place in the Midwest. Do you like writing about things that are closer to home?
Well, yes, I do, because you write what you know, and I know the Midwest, and I know Oklahoma and Texas, and now I know Iowa, and I'm kind of like Louis D'Amour to a certain extent. If I say a river in my area that I'm writing in, well, that river is really there. You know, that's what he said. He never wrote a book that didn't have some real facts.
Right, in real places.
Yeah, in real places. I met him one time. He was a very nice man. He was not only a good writer, of course, he didn't write romance. He wrote adventure.
But they have a lot in common.
Yes.
A lot of young writers, I'm sure, come to you and ask for advice. What is your favorite piece of advice to give to people who...
My advice is to get an idea and then start. You know, a lot of people have got ideas, but they never start. That start is the famous word. If you would start something, you will more than likely keep going, but you've got to start first.
When you look at all of the books that you've written, 60 books, thousands and thousands of pages, millions of readers, millions of copies of your books still in print, what do you think about all of that? What do you think about your contribution? You've accomplished a lot.
Well, I do when I look at all of those covers that I've got framed on the wall. I have accomplished a lot, but it's been a very interesting life. I wouldn't trade it for anything.
At 94, what keeps you writing?
Well, why not? That's the thing. Why not keep, as long as I keep going and keep my mind working? I like crossword puzzles, too, I think. Even if I'm 94, I'm not dead yet.
Do you find you can't write as much as you used to? Do you find that you can't quite keep up with your imagination, or do you just keep pace?
No, I can't keep up with my imagination lots of times, and I get my grandson to help me out a little.
Yeah. Well, it's nice that you have someone who can be your assistant.
Oh, yes, he is very good. He writes on his own, too, but he doesn't write my kind of stuff.
Yeah. So your next book, Take Me Home, comes out in July. Are you hard at work on the next one?
Yes, I think the next one will probably take place during World War II.
Well, we can't wait for it, Dorothy. Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Well, you're welcome.
Dorothy Garlock of Clear Lake, Iowa. Her latest book, Take Me Home, as I just mentioned, comes out in July. She is 94 years old. Coming up in just a moment, I'm going to talk with three other Iowa romance writers, and you're welcome to join the conversation as well. This is Talk of Iowa.
Everything you do, I get a funny feeling when you hold my hand. I love you, I bet you. I love you, I bet you, I bet you I do. I bet you I go for the way you woo. For when you take me in your arms, I feel so grand. I love you, I bet you. The way you kiss me when you say goodnight.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about romance writing. And with me now are three more Iowa romance novelists. Maggie Rivers is here. She grew up in the South, but now she lives in Des Moines. Hello, Maggie.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
And give us a description of the kinds of romance novels you write.
I write erotic romance, the hot, steamy stuff.
All right. And is there, in talking to us before the show, you characterized your heroes for us just a little bit. What kind of heroes do you like to write?
Well, I like heroes that have six-pack abs, that are protective of their heroines. They're alpha males, just really nice guys.
All right. Also with us is Barbara Barrett. She lives in Waukee. Hello, Barbara.
Good morning.
And now, romance writing is a retirement career for you?
Well, actually, it started long before I retired. I just have a lot more time now to work at it.
All right. And I know that your latest book, Saved by the Salsa, is coming out in August. Can you give us a descriptor of the kinds of things that you write?
Yes, I write contemporary romance, modern day people and the types of struggles they have. I characterize my writing as romance at work because I come from a human resources background, and my fascination with jobs that I had in my previous career seems to seep into my writing. So I spend a little more time about the kinds of things that people do in their occupations in my books.
All right. And also joining the conversation today is Heidi Cullinan, and she is a romance writer who lives in Ames. Hello, Heidi.
Hello.
And we know that approximately 91% of the romance audience is female. That is not the audience you're going for, right?
A little bit of both.
Yeah. Okay.
It tends to be about 60% female, but I do have a significant male readership as well.
And describe the kinds of books you write for us.
I write primarily gay romance, although I do have some lesbian and bisexual and transgender romances in my future. Not like immediate. They're on my list of things to do.
Oh, okay. All right. And what is your latest book?
My book that is coming out in September is called Fever Pitch, and it's a new adult contemporary, which new adult is college set romances or just out of college, sort of like getting started in life. And it's second in a series, and it happens to be set in Minnesota.
All right. And Maggie, I didn't ask you what your next project is that's coming out. What is the next thing for you?
Actually, the next book that I have coming out is Stilettos and Sturgis that I write with a group of ladies called the Stiletto Girls. There's three of us in that group. And that one comes out June 21st, and we're having a signing at the Big Barn Hardly here in Des Moines.
And you do tend to publish your books in anthologies with two other women. How did that start?
Well, actually, we started with another lady, Glenna West, and Glenna's mother had a stroke, and so Glenna decided that she was going to drop out of the group. And now we have Angela Rowe and C.D. Ann Rowe, who write with us. And we just happened to be friends that got together and decided we would write together. All three of us were writers to begin with. I have other books that I write on my own, but this is the Stiletto Girls that the anthologies are.
All right. Now, I know that you started writing as a young woman, a child, actually.
Exactly.
You were driven to write very early. In fact, all three of you started writing when you were kids. But how did you get involved in writing romance, Maggie?
I love romance books. I read romance ever since I can remember. When I learned how to read, I started reading anything that I could get my hands on, and someone handed me a romance book, and that did it. I haven't gone back since.
All right. Barbara, how about you?
My mother used to read romance novels, and I kind of didn't really care about that. I characterized those as the Nurse Nancy types of books. I don't mean to disparage them now, but it wasn't until I was I think my children were both born that I started reading romance. The first one I ever read was Shanna by Kathleen Woodowis. And after that, I thought I was just in love with the whole idea of it and thought, I think I can do this too.
So had you been a little bit dismissive of the idea of romance novels before then?
No, I was just too busy with my career and my two children.
And you, I know that you spent your career as a human resources analyst for Iowa State government.
Yes, I did.
Did your coworkers know that you were also dabbling in writing romance on the side?
Yes, they did. I don't know that anyone believed that I was ever going to get published. I don't know that after a while I believed it. But lo and behold, 2 years ago, that happened.
Wow. Well, congratulations
on that.
And Heidi, how did you get into this line of work?
Well, I started reading romance in high school when my chorus teacher gave me Jude Devereaux's A Knight in Shining Armor. I can't even remember why she gave it to me. She just decided I would like it, and I did, and I started reading. I read through college. I have a my bachelor's is in English, and I was originally intending to go for my PhD, so I would read all these very heavy tomes all week long, but every weekend I would go over to Meyer Drugs in Waverly and buy a stack of romance novels and read them all weekend for my reward. And sometime between I had always been writing just sort of – I had always been writing since I was 12, but when I got into grad school, I started taking it seriously. And I joined RWA, the Romance Writers of America, like a professional organization for romance authors, both unpublished and published. And I, in about 1999, I started trying to submit and going to classes and just learning what I could about trying to get published.
And how did you get into writing gay romance novels? I'm very curious about that.
It was sort of a long, slow slide. Sometime in the right around the time my daughter was born in 2001, I started having LGBT secondary characters, and they immediately became the most interesting to me and to anyone who read my who was beta reading my work. And finally, one friend said to me, "Look, Heidi, you just need to make them the main characters because they're clearly where your passion lies." And I said, "But I don't know who's publishing those. I don't know where I do it." And she said, "You should just write it and it will work out." And she was right. It did. It took a little while and took some investigating to figure out where to send my work. But I'm very happy with what I write right now.
Now, just the tone of our conversation, Barbara, just a couple of minutes ago, hinted at the fact that romance novelists or romance novels don't necessarily get a whole lot of respect. It is the largest part of our publishing industry. I saw a figure that 55% of novels published in North America are romance novels. That may not be an up-to-date figure. It could be even bigger.
I actually have that figure.
Oh,
if you're curious.
Yeah.
Romance Writers of America, generally, they keep stats on this. And in 2012, the romance fiction sold $1.4 billion. In 2013, it's $1.3. 74.8 million people read at least one romance in 2008, and in 2012, they were 16.7% of the U.S. consumer market, which is the largest share of anything.
All right. So, but even so, and I grew up as a literary snob, so I'll group myself in with this group of people who don't give romance novels much respect as far as literature goes. How do you respond to that, Barbara?
I think the first thing I say to that is, have you ever read one? Have you read one recently? Because I think that there is some very good writing going into romance novels today with the help of Romance Writers of America that Heidi was talking about. The members, and it's 10,000 plus strong, have wonderful resources at hand as far as how do you develop a story that is not only captivating and compelling, but that interest brings your readers in and has a true arc in a person's personal development. I think the thing about romance novels is, and this is one of the characteristics of them, is that they have a happy ending. And not all literary, a lot of literature does not have happy endings. It explores why that's the case and why you got to that. So that may be one of the reasons why some people don't care for the genre.
Right. Well, anybody else want to weigh in on that, Maggie?
Yes. The romance books today, I mean, they deal with today's problems. They deal with autism. They deal with cancer. They have, you know, all those things combined in there. The only true thing for a romance book is that it has to have the happy ever after. And who doesn't like a happy ever after where everybody comes out at the end and they're all satisfied and happy? That to me is something to strive for even in everyday life.
And Heidi, do you want to weigh in on that too?
Sure. The big thing to me is romance. The main themes of romance are the happily ever after, yes, but it's also hope and happiness. Also, in traditional romance where it's men and women, women especially have agency that they don't normally have in any kind of fiction, be it literary, feminist, or it's a special kind of power that is rooted in real life and in accessible themes. And in gay literature, it's the same thing, because it becomes, for be it gay men or gay women, it becomes about having power that society may be denying you, and happy outcomes and powerful outcomes and hopeful outcomes that aren't necessarily standard in our fiction.
Now, one of the things that unifies romance novels is that happy ending. Another thing that unifies romance novels tends to be disaster striking. Dorothy Garluck has been quoted as saying, well, after a while, you have to burn down a barn or stir up a tornado or something along those lines. But is that an absolute necessity in a good romance novel, Maggie?
You want some kind of conflict in there. You don't want your characters to go through with absolutely nothing that stands in their way. You want to show that even though there is something there that is trying to prevent them from getting together, that in the end they still manage to overcome all the problems that life throws at them, and they come out happy ever after at the end.
Well, and Heidi, with your books, a disaster or at least obstacles to overcome are sort of written into the subject matter, because in our society there is still so much discrimination. Does that give you a lot of fodder for character development and plot development?
It does. I try not to make that exclusive, because it's a fine line, because you have to honor that, and it's definitely part of reality for LGBT people, be they fictional or real. But I also want to make the challenges things that are universal to all people, and that makes the books accessible to everyone reading them, but also helps. That's another way to legitimize the whole experience. It's to say, because especially for LGBT literature, in literary fiction, there are not a lot of happy endings. There's a lot of death. There's a lot of disappointment. And it's because they're reflecting a reality where it's not that romance is fantasy, but it's a fantasy of power. So I try to include everything, not just the stereotypes or judgments or things like that.
Well, a lot of romance is fantasy. And Maggie, I want to go back to what you said. And here's the quote that you sent us before. I write hot, sexy, sizzling romances where the hero is just what my heroine needs. He's strong and confident with broad shoulders and six-pack abs. His face is more rugged than handsome, but he has a heart of gold hidden underneath all his protective armor. Now, that's a fantasy. And some people criticize romance novels for setting us up for disappointment, for creating expectations that really can't be met in real life. Does that concern you?
No, not really. My heroes are average guys. They don't necessarily look like the bodybuilder type of person. They are down-to-earth people. And I don't see that the stereotype of the hero with the six-pack abs and all that. It's just a fantasy that most people know is not necessarily real. But I like it. It works.
It's fun.
I can dream.
What do you think, Barbara?
You probably don't realize you're not here, but my husband's sitting across the room from me as I answer this. So I keep that in mind as the answer pours forth. But my heroes, yes, they're good looking. They're not necessarily the six pack ab types, although I wouldn't rule that out. But it's the person in there. It's the growth of that person throughout the course of the book, the journey they go on to. There's usually some type of interior conflict that they are facing, and it's the journey that they go on to resolve that I think is the most interesting to me, and it makes them more human to my readers.
Heidi?
I would say that The one of the things that I think people don't realize if they don't regularly read romance is, while the stereotype is that all heroes and heroines, or heroes and heroes, or heroines and heroines, are all very good looking, the problem is that when you're falling in love, even someone who's necessarily attractive to everyone is attractive to you. And I definitely try to include characters that aren't traditionally handsome, but there's no... I've realized that in a lot of reviews, reviewers will often talk about how the character was handsome or something. And even though I said that they weren't necessarily so, because as soon as you're falling in love with them, with the narrator or the hero, then they are beautiful to you. So I think, and again, there's so much of this that is not about fantasy of. It's not as simple as sex. It's about validating relationships. It's about women's experience specifically, traditionally, what romance is rooted in, which is not usually represented in story, not in this kind of powerful, positive way, in a way that you can count on every time you pick up a book. It's so much more about that than it is about a perfect sexual fantasy.
We are talking about romance writing this hour, and with me this hour are three Iowa romance novelists. Heidi Cullinan is a romance writer who lives in Ames. Barbara Barrett lives in Waukee, and Maggie Rivers lives in Des Moines. And you're welcome to join the conversation this hour as well. Are you a romance reader? What keeps you coming back? Let us know. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org.
Don't let a thing ever change you. Stay as sweet as you are. Don't let a soul rearrange you. Don't ever lose all the charm you possess. Your loveliness, darling, the way you say yes. As you are, discreet as you are, you're divine, dear. Stay as grand as you are, and as you are.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about romance writing. And with me, I have three romance novelists. Maggie Rivers lives in Des Moines, Barbara Barrett in Waukee, and Heidi Cullinan in Ames. And you are welcome to join our conversation as well this hour. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Are you a romance reader? Are you a budding romance novelist? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. And Jamie's on the line in Forest City. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, I'm actually an author myself. I don't write romance. I write mysteries. But I wanted to say, you had discussed earlier that you didn't think that the heroine and hero were authentic enough in romance and that they were too much of a fantasy. And I have to say, I don't read books for reality. I live reality. I read for the fantasy, and that's why I read romance. So I don't want them to be realistic. I read them for the man of my dreams. I'm married to the man of my dreams, but outside of that, that's why I read romance.
All right, Jamie, I think you're in good company there. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I suppose, you know, the journey that a romance takes you on, I mean, you live vicariously through these characters in the books, and you feel as if you're falling in love or going on this journey. I can understand how that could even be almost an addictive experience. Heidi?
Yeah, I was thinking in particular there was this happens about once every 6 months. It's almost like I think someone in lit fiction sets a timer, and someone, usually a male, but sometimes a female, writes a scathing article about how romance is awful and drecky and bad for people's brains. Recently in the New Republic, William Giraldi described romance novels as equivalent of racists. I'm not quite sure how that works. He also compared them to hot dogs because they're bad for you. And in response, Bobby Dumas at Kirkus Reviews wrote a defense of romance where, in addition to taking down a lot of his argument, she mentioned specifically that She enjoys reading literary fiction and traditional classical fiction, but too much of it she finds emotionally draining and makes her heart sore because the outcomes are not always positive. And to that, I would also add that people don't complain about the amount of murders in a crime serial, and they don't complain about the amount of violence in a horror novel the way they complain about sexuality and feminization in romance novels, which I think speaks a lot about our culture.
That is interesting. And the different genres within romance are interesting to me. And Heidi, obviously you're in a specific genre yourself, but I'm also curious because a few years ago somebody coined the term, and now I guess it's more years than I care to remember, but coined the term chick lit. And all of a sudden, there were all of these chick lit books that were being sold sort of separate from the romance novels, although they're very, very similar to what we would historically have thought about as romance novels. Maggie, what do you think of those different categories?
There's a category for every type of story that you want to read. You can find religious things, you can find erotic things, you can find everything in between. And people like different categories that they don't necessarily, people that read my Maggie books don't necessarily want to read some of the other books that I write because I write in a different genre. So it's just all over the board. You can find anything that you want to read, from a romantic mystery to a romantic science fiction, just anything that's out there. And I would tell people that if you haven't read any of them recently, go out and get two or three books and find the genre that you like and try it. I think you'll be surprised.
Now, I think we need to talk about sex because obviously that is a big part of a lot of romance novels. And I spoke with the author Amy Tan not that long ago, and in her latest book, she wrote her very first sex scene, and she said she was reluctant to write a sex scene for all of those years because everybody believed that everything she wrote was about her or her family. And so she assumed that if she wrote a sex scene that everybody would think that was exactly what was going on in her bedroom. And is there any kind of nervousness about that in writing sex scenes? I can imagine that it could be a little embarrassing almost. And Barbara?
I knew you were going to come to me. nervousness? I don't know. I'd say nervousness as far as friends looking at you differently or people that have known you in the past. I know that my husband did get a few raised eyebrows when my first one came out. Once you get past doing something that's fairly descriptive anatomically and you get out of the process of it and you move more into the emotions and the passion that is going on and the growth in the relationship that usually the sex is – demonstration of, the nervousness goes away on the part of the author. I don't know about the reader.
So do you have to go back and I mean, once you get into the scene, it gets easier to write. Do you have to go back and rewrite so that you can bring that same kind of ease to the beginning of the scene as well?
For me, over and over. It's not my favorite part of the writing.
Maggie?
I don't have any problems with the sex scenes. Obviously, that's what I write, and I've had people volunteer to be my test subject along those lines. But it's not the sex; it is the emotion that goes along with it, and that's what my heroines look for. That's what my heroes look for, and the sex is just secondary.
Heidi?
Well, obviously, the biggest question I get is usually from gay men who have read my book, and they tend to blink a lot with wide eyes and say things like, how did you know? You shouldn't know that. And the answer to me is, writing about sex is a writing about the deepest intimacy and the most emotional vulnerability that we can have as humans. And whether I'm writing about a man and a woman and a woman, or a man and a man, it doesn't, the calculus doesn't change, because it's always about intimacy. And you can cover a little bit of unfamiliar ground with some research and some imagination, but mostly what you need is humanity and a desire to understand people when they are their most vulnerable.
So, okay, you mentioned research. Do you interview people? Have you done research? Because this is not your personal experience.
I've done some interviewing. I asked very early on. A lot of it, actually, I was more instinctive than I thought it would be, but I second-guessed myself. And I've asked a friend of mine who lives in England, actually. I asked him on email. I just worry that I'm going to get it wrong. And he said to me, Heidi, just love is love, and that is all you need to know, and everything else will take care of itself. And honestly, that is largely what happens.
Interesting. And Maggie, you mentioned getting volunteers. Do you get some uncomfortable letters?
I do. I get some uncomfortable emails, some uncomfortable snail mail, some uncomfortable people in front of me kind of thing. But you deal with it, you know, and I enjoy what I do. I enjoy what I write. So that's just all secondary to me.
We're talking about romance writing this hour on Talk of Iowa, and you're welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. And now, of course, a book that got a lot of attention. The movie is forthcoming, of course, 50 Shades of Grey, a few years ago when that was published, and the trilogy that it became, that got a lot of attention for a lot of reasons. One of them is because it started out as fan fiction. Another reason is that it started out as self-published, I think. I don't remember.
Yes, it was.
Okay, right. So anyway, that got a lot of conversation, but it also started some conversations from people who I don't think had read the book, you know, saying, wow, what is it that women really enjoy out of reading this kind of literature? Because the sex was supposed to be bondage and sort of beyond the norm. And we were going to do a show about what kind of appeal this has to women. So I dug into that book, and I found that it was very typical romance story where, you know, the woman is so wonderful that the man gives up the things that are important to him. And I think that's really where the fantasy lay for a lot of women, that, you know, someone would be so in love with me that they would change their life dramatically for me. But I'm curious about how this 50 Shades of Grey phenomena really affected you. And Heidi, I'll start with you.
I have a lot of feelings about 50 Shades of Grey. I respect it as a set of novels, all three of them, 50 Shades of Grey being the first one, obviously. I have a little bit of issue because I have written about BDSM in my novels, and my experience and research on what BDSM entails and what E.L. James wrote are very different, and I don't feel she did the community a lot of favors. But I think there are a couple negative messages about how to I'm trying to think of how to say it. Basically, I don't agree with all her messages. Let's just put it that way. But I do understand that the book there was a great ability to self-insert in the main heroine. You could put yourself in her shoes, and as you said, imagine a man would give everything up for you and take away the guilt of sex for you. And that is very powerful. And I think that is what most people responded to. And I think that is why the books were so popular, because it was accessible. Whether or not the writing was brilliant or not, there's a lot of popular works across genres and types of story, whether they be in film or TV or books, that are not necessarily well written, but they speak to people because of their accessibility and the message that they have. And I think that that's largely what happened there.
Do you think that because of that phenomenon and how public people were about talking about it, do you think that took away a little bit of the taint of reading romance novels?
I think Possibly. I mean, I think that that's a lot of that's still there. The amount of sex in those books, I think, shocked people. But also a lot of people, I think, then decided they didn't care and it was okay. And I know that a lot of erotic authors say that their sales went up markedly after the release of those books. And as they have continued in their popularity, so has interest in erotic romance. I know one author who talked about her books got reissued by her publisher and she started getting offers of book tours in like the Czech Republic and places that she'd never been because she could really track it all back to 50 Shades of Grey and its popularity.
Interesting. Maggie, did you see any kind of a change in the community after that?
There was some increase in sales after that. But I also think that it comes from e-readers too, because people can download on e-readers and read without everybody else knowing what it is they're reading. So I think
you don't have to fold the back cover or the front cover over.
Right, right. I think that helped a lot too. So,
Barbara?
Well, from my standpoint, because it's not really the genre I write, I think I walk the road that most authors probably walk, which is I write because I love to write and I have a story to tell. And I also would like to get noticed for it. I'd like to get not only published, but I'd like to have public attention brought to it. So I think the public attention part that this book generated was fascinating to me, how it started and how fast it went and how the media jumped on it. And in the back of my mind is this, what can I do that can generate something without writing a similar book?
Right. Well, and I'm curious, we have just a couple of minutes left, but all of you are operating in this environment where there are lots and lots of books out there and you have to do something to get noticed. And Barbara, I know that you blog and try to create a relationship with your writers. Maggie, you do that as well. Heidi, I'm not sure if you do. But Barbara, how do you connect with your readers? How do you get the word out?
Every way I can. And I'm still experimenting. I'm still working my way through social media. Some of it is I'm comfortable with. Some of it I'm still learning. And some of it, it just doesn't make sense to me. I recently attended the Romantic Times convention in New Orleans, which is put on by Romantic Times magazine it's aimed at readers of romance. I went specifically to get to meet people who actually read it, and if not to have long talks about what interests you, at least to get my name in front of them.
And Maggie?
I teach romance writing classes through the Des Moines Public Schools, and I also teach through the Iowa prison systems. And I think that gets, you know, a lot of the word out. But I also enjoy doing my book signings out with my fans. I like to go out to places and actually get to meet the fans and talk to them and find out what they like about the books that I write. So.
And Heidi, how do you connect with your readers?
A lot of it is online. There's a lot of some Facebook groups, sometimes on Goodreads, although I haven't been on there as much. I do blog and I have newsletters and I have forums on my website. I also actually went to a Romantic Times convention in New Orleans just a couple weeks ago. And there I have started at those conventions and that convention and ones like it. Sometimes I run social events. I did a couple of different larger reader parties there to just try to meet more people. I give away my books a lot of times when I can. I host like contests or just like random giveaways and things on the internet and sometimes in my newsletter just to try to get the word out. My publisher also is really good about getting my work in front of people and in front of reviewers so that just more exposure all the time. We're always looking for new ways.
Well, Heidi, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
And tell us again what your next book is.
Fever Pitch, which is out September 30th from Samhain Publishing.
All right. Heidi Cullinan is a romance writer who lives in Ames. Barbara Barrett, thank you so much.
You're quite welcome.
And again, You tell us about your next project.
It's Saved by the Salsa. It's out August 8th from the Wild Rose Press.
All right, Barbara Barrett of Waukee and Maggie Rivers, thank you.
Thank you.
And it's Stilettos and Sturgis out in June, right?
That's it.
All right, Maggie Rivers of Des Moines. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.
Falling in love with love is playing the fool. Caring too much is such a juvenile fancy. Learning to trust is just for children in school. I fell in love with love one night when the moon was full. I was unwise with eyes unable to see.